very busy. Many important matters require king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
your fingers or your king doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plan.
He's one.
Super girl.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffria Podcast. My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim at Fit and Trim on Twitter. And with me, as always, is somebody cooler than the Night's King. It's Catfish. Catfish, how you doing?
Very chill tonight. Thank you so much, Bubba. Yes, my name is Catfish, and you can reach me at CJGman67 on Twitter. We love it when our double L's, loyal listeners, reach out to us on Twitter and let us know what they think about this podcast. We are pre-gaming the heck out of this season 7, Bubba.
Yeah, we're releasing 7 podcasts to get us ready for season 7 of Game of Thrones.
Whoa, I like the symmetry in that.
That's exactly right. And today we're on podcast number 4 of 7, counting us down to Game of Thrones season 7. 4 weeks, a month away from season 7 coming up and grabbing us with its ice-cold veins of
so
winter.
So what you're saying is this is the Roz podcast.
Roz?
Yeah, the Hump podcast. Oh, it's been a long day.
It has been a long day, Catfish. We were just in lovely, beautiful, trendy downtown Culver City,
yes,
California, where the Los Angeles Film Fest was happening. We were literally about 10 feet away from the actor who plays Jaime Lannister on HBO's Game of Thrones, Nikolai Coster-Waldau, as he was premiering his new film entitled
Shot Caller.
It's going to be on DirecTV pay-per-view in about a month, but then it's going to have a short release in theaters. Seeing Nikolai Coster-Waldau there on the red carpet as he was about to premiere the film, I have to say this, Catfish, he's a good-looking guy. He looks good in person.
I'm saying he's a handsome man. I knew you thought that when you turned to me and you said, that guy's almost as good-looking as I am. I knew you thought, that is that one handsome dude.
I was trying to think how to pay him the most impressive compliment, and that was it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yeah, so this is an interesting film for him because this is not a spoiler. It turns out he's just a normal guy, and then for reasons which could be a spoiler, he ends up going to jail and looks like a tough guy with tattoos, and he grows one of those handlebar mustaches. It'll be interesting to see because Nikolai is always you see him in roles, he's sort of like an upper crust guy. So it'll be interesting to see him go rough hewn.
Once again, it's just out in a month. Now, we did not see that film, Catfish. Why? Because we only watch things that star or have starred His Grace King Joffrey.
That's exactly right.
Podcast.
That's exactly right. We successfully boycotted seeing Shaw Collar. Despite the fact that I had a pass that said I should be able to see every movie.
Mm-hmm. Why do we love His Grace King Joffrey? Well, we don't even have to explain. Listeners, you know why. But why do we do the podcast? We do the podcast because people asked us to set the record straight about King Joffrey. If we have to set the record straight, that means there are unstraighteners out there.
Oh,
we need you, listeners, to help us non-unstraighten these lies about King Joffrey. We had a bunch we've already listed, but we had some new people that I wanted to give a shout-out to, Catfish, who are helping us be non-unstraighteners.
Hans Steiniger?
Right.
Hell yeah.
Okay, well, if it's difficult for you, I'll do the next couple.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll do Nathan Dockin, who's at Nathan Dockin on Twitter.
Okay.
Our good friend Raymond Charles, a great double L, who's at Alpha Centurion 1. We have Taylor's Oldest Time, who's at Amy Home Alone. She's great. We also had
our old friend, Michael Killey. He's one of the OGs.
Aaron Marie and the wonderful Susan Monk.
Also an OG. Then we have Sophia Nika and Narcisse Joa. And we have Alpana A. Bajal, as well as Nicholas Timon. Or it could be Timon.
Boy, if you mispronounce their name, Catfish, that is shameful. These are loyal listeners and you can't even get their names right.
Horrible that I did that wrong. I do know that I said Narcisse right because she is an old...
Yeah, she's great.
She's an OG as well and sent me a message saying, you did it right, thank you. So at least once I did it right, maybe not that time. Now, we've had some great, as well, feedback on Twitter.
Okay.
We are going to be giving out some great, amazing prizes this year on the Joffrey podcast because if you were a follower of Joffrey, I mean, first of all, that's a gift that keeps giving to your life to follow his example.
Yep.
But we thought in addition to that, you should get some earthly rewards.
Yes.
So to do that,
all you have to do is when we send out a tweet with the hashtag Joffrey of Podcast, or we post it to our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast. That's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcasts, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. When we post a notice there that we've released a new episode of the podcast, you share it, you retweet it, you're eligible to win. That's easy.
You're already entered. That's all you have to do. One other thing you can do,
which you should do. Oh, yeah.
Well, I believe this is just the second thing we're talking about now, but yes, the second thing that you can do.
A fifth thing?
A fifth thing. Seven hells, yes. The eighth thing that you can do is like the Double P Podcast page on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
facebook.com/doublepodcast. And when you do that, you'll get instant notifications when we drop a new podcast, as we are about to drop. Not only are we dropping some now, but they're just going to keep on coming throughout the summer. It's very exciting.
For the 7 episodes of season 7 of HBO's Game of Thrones, we're giving away at least one prize every episode. That is incredible. We're going to start giving them away there on July 16th, so please be able to enter. On this week's The Joffrey Podcast, Catfish, we're going to do a lot of things. We're going to give some thoughts on some great Game of Thrones experiences that aren't in your television, aren't on HBO. We're going to be talking about the Game of Thrones live concert experience that happened here in the States earlier this year, 2017.
Okay, that's one.
As well as a wonderful show which premiered at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, co-created by a good old improv buddy of mine, Al Samuels, entitled Thrones, a musical comedy extravaganza.
Okay, that's two.
Then we're going to do what I like to call a double B.
Double B?
Double B, Catfish, is something I like to call a book bitchin' segment.
Easy for you to say, as always.
That's where we're going to look at a character on the show and see if, because the show is now past the books, if the show is possibly spoiling us on that character's story arc and destiny from the books.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear that and maybe participate.
And we're going to cover a guy we just saw in Culver City. We were just talking about Nikolai Coster-Waldau's character of Jaime Lannister. Some people
almost believe, as handsome as you, Bubba.
Some people believe possibly the true father of His Grace King Joffrey.
That's just scurrilous rumors.
But before we get to that, Catfish, I want to talk about some of the great feedback we've gotten. Now, a couple of podcasts ago, we were talking about Game of Thrones Season 8, final Season 8, may not premiere until 2019. What would Game of Thrones fans, what would our listeners do? Would they keep HBO for a whole year? And I got some great feedback about that. A true wonderful fan, Wendy, she wrote, quote, "I love HBO, The Leftovers,
done,
Veep, Silicon Valley, Bill Maher, and of course Game of Thrones."
Okay.
And so Wendy's implying that if she had to go a year without Game of Thrones, she would still be subscribing to HBO because it does have stuff she likes. So that's good to hear. You know, this, if this comes to pass and turns out to be true, oh boy, that's going to be a painful year for me. And I may actually drop it.
You may actually drop HBO?
For the year until Game of Thrones comes back for season 8.
All right.
This is what we talked about on the previous podcast.
I know, but I do remember that. I just think that we're going to need HBO because we're going to have about 4 or 5 other shows on HBO to do podcasts about. We don't even know what they are right now.
Oh, because FX is canceling The Strain, do you think they're going to move? HBO's going to come in, sweep in, and pick that up? That's right, listeners. Go to our Facebook page to learn about all our other podcasts, including Got Your Milk, a podcast about the FX show The Strain.
Love that. Love that one. Now, we've got some other great feedback. One of my favorite double L's.
Favorites? So yeah. We don't want to claim favorites, so let's just skip this part. So,
okay.
Going on.
Tracy at Tracy2EZ.
Yeah, she's great.
She says, "I learned a valuable lesson today from hashtag Joffrey Podcast about hashtag fake news and listening to both sides. Thanks, Fit and Trim at CJGman67.
Yeah, she meant both sides, meaning Bubba's side and Catfish's side.
That's right. That's right. What we like to do is we like to incorporate all personalities.
That's true.
Now, David Gobert our friend
Grumpy Gobert.
Grumpy Gobert.
Apparently, he's not your favorite, though, since Tracy stole that line.
I said one of my favorites.
Oh, okay.
Grumpy Gobert is another favorite.
Great.
Patman 23 is a favorite.
Certainly.
I've got a lot of favorites. He said, first of all, Jamie has already spoiled Cersei several times, and they have the offspring to prove it.
Oh,
the scurrilous rumors again.
Oh, man. That's
now, cool. He also did appreciate, he just sent a tweet out saying, hashtag Hordor. And so I just wanted to thank him for that because he's starting a new trend. The Hordor is a new trend.
To get that inside joke, download our previous, our pregame podcast number 3, getting ready for Game of Thrones season 7.
Another one of my favorites.
Hey.
Matt Murdock at Musical Concepts says, exclusive with President Trump for Fit and Trim and CJG Man on the Joffria podcast.
Yeah, I retweeted that out. There's great, great work with our correspondent, a guy I like to call Double M, Matt Murdock, and President Trump. I tweeted out, search my Twitter handle, at Fit and Trim, or search his Twitter handle, which is?
At Musical Concepts.
Heck yeah.
Now, one thing I was wondering about, Bubba, is okay. Last week we took some people to task.
We did.
And I believe we silenced them, because I have not heard one thing from them.
They haven't come out with a new podcast after we straightened them, our good friends at Radio Westeros.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, who's next? History of Westeros, we've got to unstraighten them, or non-unstraighten them. We've got a non-unstraightened podcast. Winterfell again, a great podcast. We got to non-unstraighten them. We're just going to go down the list.
Yeah, they have been chasing.
I'm your prince. Fingers, I'm your prince.
Tongue. Flowers.
Kiss it.
Tongue. I'm your prince.
You'll kiss it again when I return.
Tongue.
Heart eater, I've named it.
For your tongue. Fingers, for your tongue.
You've been holding flowers.
I'm your prince.
I said flowers.
Heart eater, I've named it.
Bitch, mother.
I'm telling mother. I'm your prince.
All right, Catfish, now it's time to talk about some outside-your-house Game of Thrones experiences, and we're going to start off with Ramin Djawadi's awesome experience he released on U.S. arenas in the early spring of 2017, the Game of Thrones live concert experience.
Yes, and it was an experience. It wasn't just musicians, it wasn't just singers, but they had some nice visuals with the screens. They had some smoke. They had some rain.
They had trees come up. They had fake snow because winter is coming. It was really an amazing thing. And I would believe, based on the fact that we saw it here in Los Angeles at the Forum down in Inglewood, the fact that it did seem like a pretty good crowd, that there's a chance that this will come back again. And if you haven't gotten the chance to check it out, I think it's actually pretty fun. If you enjoy Game of Thrones, go check it out. It was a very fun experience.
But it was more fun for some than others because some people got a very special experience. Perhaps you'd like to share that with people. There was a little bit of difference between, say, the royalty's experience this concert and the non-royalty experience.
So the whole Double P podcast family went down to the Forum in Inglewood. It was me, Bubba, Catfish there. We had our good buddy Mork, as well as my brother Zipper. We all four of us went down to the Forum in Inglewood. And as a slight tangent, I do have to bring this up because it's going to keep coming up. Zipper, my brother, he's lived in L.A. for many years, and for the last 2 years, he hasn't had a car. So Zipper was driving his brand new car. He was so excited. He finally got a car after 2 years, and he's driving us all down to the Forum in Inglewood, and we park. And then we got some special gifts because we were in a VIP section of this, Catfish. We got them as soon as we walked in the door. And so my brother Zipper, he's like, you know what? I'm going to go throw these in my car so that they won't get injured. We won't lose them as we're walking around the concert. He goes back to his car. His bumper was scuffed.
That is the right word for it. It was not dented, it was scuffed.
And for the rest of the night, we had all these great experiences. We'd hear these great songs, like orchestra would play The Reigns of Castamere, and we had the lead singer of System of a Down come out and sing those lyrics as this is happening. Such an incredible experience. And after it was over, my brother Zipper, he'd turn around and he'd go, man, that was great. But can you believe about my car? Oh boy, that was painful. But anyway, so we get there,
mm-hmm.
And we get there about an hour before the show is supposed to start.
Right.
Because we had four people going. Two of us we got VIP tickets for. And so we go into this area where there's food and drinks and light snacks. And you got to meet Ramin Djawadi. And you got to see some props. And you got to have your picture taken on the Iron Throne. So my brother, we got a couple of drinks. And we're standing.
Wait, hold on. So you and your brother went into the VIP area.
Right.
Not either of your podcasting partners on the Game of Thrones.
No. I left Catfish and Mork to starve outside the arena. We got some drinks. We're in line to get our picture taken on the Iron Throne. And we're in line. And it's at the end of this long kind of hallway, secluded area. We finally get to the very front to get our pictures taken on the Iron Throne. When they stop and they say, okay, no, everybody, now's your meet and greet with Ramin Djawadi. So he comes up and stands in front of the Iron Throne and starts taking questions from the audience. Meaning he's standing like 3 feet in front of us and says, who wants any questions? Who wants any questions? Everybody there was very shy. And also tied in, because he's looking out at the audience, he's kind of staring at my brother and I. So I throw out a question. I'm like, how many shows are you doing the music for? Why don't you tell us about that? Because I know that he does the music for The Strain, another show I've mentioned that we podcast about here on the Double B Podcast Network. And suddenly he starts talking about, well, I do this, I do Westworld. All these people in the VIP area, they were all like, oh, I didn't know he did Westworld. I didn't know. I felt like, oh, come on, peeps. Come on, peeps. How do you not know he does Westworld? So everybody was like, ooh, ah. He said he hadn't. This is incredible because it was only 2 months ago. We went to this concert. He said he hadn't yet started scoring Game of Thrones Season 7.
Whoa.
And so because they have to
well,
get the final
score,
edit.
Right,
you have to
right.
get the final edit locked. So he hadn't even seen any of the footage, hadn't started yet. And then we asked a bunch of other questions. His mom was there. So he's finally getting his mom to come see him do this orchestra. Really cool, really good guy. My brother, Zipper, and I, we had to ask almost all the questions because everybody else was kind of hesitant to. So we kept asking. One of the things that we asked that he ended up talking about was that his instrument wasn't really the piano. The instrument he always felt the strongest on was the guitar, which was interesting, and that ties into the end of the concert experience when they come out and play The Bear and the Maiden Fair, and he actually strapped on a guitar, and he played that as the audience left. It was real fun.
Wow. Now, so it's funny that you say a lot of people didn't know what else he scored, because I don't know whether it was to share the experience or to rub it in, but you sent Mork and I a text from your special experience, and all I saw was a picture of a guy who was sort of dressed up in Game of Thrones wear and had a really excited look in his eyes. And I think I texted you something like, are there freaks dressing up back there? I had no idea that this is what he looked like.
He was surrounded by cosplayers. There weren't many, but there were some good ones. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/DoublePPodcast, to check them all out. Yeah, it was a great time in this little exclusive thing. We even got our photo with Ramin Djawadi. It was wonderful. To anybody who goes to the concert and doesn't get to experience that, it's like, why go? And so now, now Catfish, I didn't see you at the behind the scenes, this special meet and greet with Ramin Djawadi. Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Despite that, I still had a very enjoyable time. I mean, they had, I don't want to say it was a full orchestra, but it was a pretty big, would you say? It was 25 piece?
Yeah, at least.
Maybe bigger than that.
At least. And then he had special performers on the sides,
Special too. Performers. They had, that was the group that was touring, the orchestra. He did have some other people, a guy who was playing a bunch of different strange instruments that weren't in an orchestra.
Right,
I remember the didgeridoo.
I remember the lovely woman who was playing the violin solo. Mm-hmm. She was beautiful. And all the specialty people had their own costumes that felt like they were a bit of Westeros formal wear, for lack of a better word.
It's kind of interesting. I wonder what venues they played, because it was a spectacle.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that works in these huger arenas. And yet, I mean, when I say huger, I mean the forum's probably around 20,000, 25,000, right?
Yeah, probably.
So it works in an arena like that. And again, in Los Angeles, it was filled up, but I don't know how many arenas you could hit and get people to come for the Game of Thrones musical experience. So they probably only hit big cities, right?
It felt like it. I'm pretty sure they opened in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, Target Center.
Oh, that's Mork's hometown.
It is. So, listeners, if you went, go ahead and share us some of your photos from this great Game of Thrones live concert experience. And once again, listeners, if you haven't gotten the chance and it comes back before season 8, go. I think you'll have a really, really good time. We ran into our great podcast Winterfell friend, Kelly Underfoot, there, and we snuck her down to some
seats right by the front.
It is the music, but they tie it with some great video screens to help you remember the kind of scene which this took place in.
They had fire as well. And I will say this, too.
Yeah.
Again, because you...
Me.
And Zipper
right.
got to have an up close and personal with Ramin Djawadi. You also received some very special gifts that we'll be giving out this season on the Joffrey podcast.
Right. So there were special Game of Thrones live concert experience mugs that were, not mugs, is it right? But I guess.
Steins.
Steins. Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah. And so we'll be giving away some of those. There were exclusive posters that was kind of the sheet music for the Game of Thrones theme, which was so cool. And they've been autographed by Ramin Djawadi. Boy,
it's pretty exciting. Yeah. Now, I do want to say one thing, and I hope that if they take this on tour again next season, that they're going to remedy the one huge problem with the show.
Well, my only thought was it was too short. This sounds weird because there is an intermission. But to me, I could have had it go even longer. So you're saying there was a problem. Let's hear. What did you think?
Well, it ties into that, but in a more specific manner.
Let's hear.
It really feels like they need to do the first act, the intermission, the show, and then they have kind of like a big sort of upbeat musical ending to it.
Yeah.
You think that's good? That's going to be the end. Then what should happen is the sort of a hush falls, and then coming up either from the ground or down from the rafters should be Joffrey.
Right.
I mean, how can you have a Game of Thrones musical experience?
Hmm.
How can you have anything Game of Thrones related and leave out the most important character?
Well, Catfish, I think that just like the show, they held off on bringing him out because they were thinking, if you do this, how can we ever top this?
Well, that's why you need to have it as the encore. Now, the only thought that I had was either number two, what they're going to do when they come out next time is they've done this show.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to hit the same places. And then the second show is going to be just all about Joffrey.
Oh, that would be great.
Okay. And I believe guitar strings used to be made out of catgut. So perhaps they could bring some correspondence there. So I thought either the second show would be completely about Joffrey or they hold Joffrey in such reverence that they felt like they couldn't do him justice.
No.
They couldn't do the double J.
Double J.
Joffrey justice that everyone in that audience deserved.
Say that again. Once again, write us if you have any questions. Tell us if you went and show us your photos. Tell us your experience. We almost got a bit spoiled because our seats were right in the front. We were right in front of the stage.
That's true.
You could throw a napkin and hit Ramin Djawadi from where we were sitting.
That's true in a way, but also since the stage was sort of elevated, we were looking up at some things. We didn't get the full benefit of the entire staging just the screens, but the rain and the fire, like that. So I don't think there was probably a bad seat in that house.
That's true.
But we definitely did have good seats.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Especially those of us who were... One more question
regarding
that special time that you and Zipper had with Ramin Djawadi.
My good buddy? Here, hold on. Let me text him and tell him you're asking about him.
Did he throne block you the whole time, or did you ever get a shot at the throne?
Well, after he gave his Q&A, then he said, okay, who wants a picture with Ramin Djawadi on the Iron Throne? So, of course, because he's sitting in the Iron Throne, you know, you kind of have to be like, well, here, I sat on the armrest in our photo with him. But then after he left...
Ramin, come on, move over.
Right. But they also didn't let us take the photo with our phone. They were like, we're going to take the phone. So you had to go to a special website a couple days later and get the image of the one with him. So after everybody left, I did get another photo on the Iron Throne. But it's not the same.
Yeah, it's definitely not the same. Well, as we all know, only one person deserves to sit in the Iron Throne anyway, and that person was mysteriously absent from the Game of Thrones musical experience.
I'm telling Mother!
Turning to something which was just as fun and just as musical, Catfish, you took us to a wonderful show in Hollywood entitled Thrones, the musical parody.
Yes, and funnily enough, there are actually two Game of Thrones themed shows in town at the time. This one happened to be sort of better reviewed. And then as you were investigating it more, you realized that it had been co-created by an old improv friend in Chicago. And so we thought, let's go to this one first. And it was, first of all, it was a very packed crowd.
Yeah, it was in a nice little 99-seat theater called the Hudson Theater there in Hollywood. Real intimate space, but it's also the kind of space you would go see improv show, kind of a
sketch.
Comedy show,
yeah,
sketch.
Yeah.
And it really is a format that we used to do back when I used to hang with Al Samuels and do improv all the time. Meaning it's not the telling of the Game of Thrones story with songs added to it. Instead, they come up with some framing device. And this
right.
is something we used to do in Chicago
right.
improv all the time. You come up with a framing device. And in this case, they come up with a framing device of a bunch of friends gathering around in somebody's apartment getting ready to watch Game of Thrones and introduce a newbie to Game of Thrones.
Right. Someone hasn't seen it. And in fact, the very first song that they do is very funny, is sort of catching her up on their friend who hasn't seen it. They throw down a lot of names. They have a lot of funny allusions to the show. So right away it started off and I thought, okay, I'm not too sure about this framing device because it sort of leaves one person out of it because they're going to kind of enact things for her.
Right.
But I found it to be, the show started off, I thought, very, very clever.
In fact, here, to give you an idea, we'll give you a sample of some of the lyrics in the show. So, it went something along the lines, if you like plot lines that end in disaster, though the blonde girl in the desert could move faster.
If you get your kicks at a public beheading, and if you get scared when you go to a wedding,
it's Thrones! And it certainly comes across better than what we just did now, because they're dancing around the stage.
And they can sing. And they know exactly what tune they're doing.
Right, exactly right.
They go through a variety of different, again, as you said, they sort of tell sort of little mini contained stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite song of the whole night was the song they did right at the end of the first act. That song was super fun. And that song was about...
So it was about the Red Wedding.
Yeah. They had a bunch of balloons all over the stage. They were popping them. It was very clever. It was very upbeat. And it's really what was great about this part of the show and a lot of the different musical acts they did was, again, instead of sort of repeating plot, it was sort of tangential. So they're sort of giving you an idea, but sort of making fun of some of the absurdities at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And how this was kind of... Basically, it was kind of a fun song about, like, how grotesque the Red Wedding was.
Right. And they constantly would cut back to the framing device of here are the friends in the apartment. And so a typical joke would be about this person who never watched Game of Thrones. Everybody's just so upset. You've never watched it? No wonder your husband left you. They keep beating up this poor girl. It's so, so terrible.
Now, we had seen pictures from her in the past, and apparently they covered a lot of White Walker action in the past.
Right.
But obviously the show, again, they've been doing it for 3 years, 4 years?
Yeah, it goes back to the 2015 Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland. And then it moved to Chicago, where these improvisers are all from. And then Al Samuels, my buddy, was the one who led the launching of it out here in L.A.
So obviously, it's sort of a living show in that they appear to have made a bunch of changes based on just season six.
Yeah, they added in a hold the door moment.
Yeah, that was interesting. There was a really cool emotional song about Hodor. I know I'm the one that sort of makes fun of Hodor. If you are the kind of person, if you cried when Hodor died, if you felt emotionally affected by it, you would have loved this song.
Yeah, they played it straight with almost no comedy.
The Hodor song was absolutely straight, and it was a real like power ballad that was really good. At that point in the show, that was either the last song or the next to last song. It's sort of, you know, we're set up, we have a lot of comedy. It sort of comes out of nowhere and also leads them to sort of put too much importance on a specific storyline rather than, you know, the White Walkers are coming.
Right. And so what's great is if you go to this particular show, after season 7, it'll get updated again, you imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Although... I presume they will keep the Red Wedding song at the end of the first act. Just so when you can marry clever lyrics and a really catchy song like they did there, you walk out of that show at the end of the first act going, oh my God, they have really, this is, I'm so excited to come back for act two.
So the show is concurrently playing in Los Angeles and Chicago. If you're anywhere near
Chicago. That's the deep dish version.
Anywhere near Chicago, anywhere near LA, need a fun night out and relatively cheap too. Thrones, the musical parody, really fun show.
Yeah, if you can find it, go get it. You'll enjoy it. There might be some groaners, but overall, you will really find yourself entertained.
And the one thing that I love about it is that we never try for laughs here on the Joffrey podcast.
And we succeed.
That hurt too much for me to say, continue on. And so if you're the type of person who can enjoy this show and yet still have some laughs about it, you'll really have a good time.
Absolutely.
Many important matters require King's attention.
All right, Catfish, it is time to get to something I'd like to call a double B.
Double B?
Double B is a phrase we in the Song of Ice and Fire community like to call book bitching.
Does Radio Westeros call it that?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, they've been suitably chastened.
Right.
We're getting them on our side.
So what we do here on the book bitching segment of the Joffrey podcast is, in the past, we would look at how the show was possibly not doing a great job of portraying the great events in the books. But now that the show is past the books, we're actually looking at the show and thinking, how can this spoil what's going to happen when George R. R. Martin releases these new books in 2045?
Well, that's right. Like, the very premise of this segment is optimistic, and that's why, A, I like it, and B, it's completely out of character with our feelings about George R. R. Martin and his writing pace.
Hey, so we're going to look at everybody's favorite possible father of King Joffrey, Jaime the Kingslayer Lannister.
Also known as the Shot Caller.
Where season 6 left Jaime going into season 7 was that he was devoted to Cersei, and he was against everybody. And when he saw that they had lost their last remaining child, Tommen, to the High Sparrow in the Faith of Seven, he wanted to go kill the High Sparrow. He was going to take care of it. He was going to slaughter them all to get their child back. Cersei said, don't worry, I'll have a trial by combat with the Mountain. You go take care of this silly problem we have at River Run. I'll be fine.
Although, and maybe this is just me inferring from my point of view, I do get a sense that Jaime is starting to not be completely on board with Cersei.
There may have been moments like that, but I think when he left, he did keep saying, you know, I got to solve this River Run problem to get back to Cersei. I got to solve this problem with the phrase, you're done, let me get back to Cersei. So you're right, I saw that, but I also saw somebody, the show presented us with someone who kept saying, hey, I got to get back to Cersei, got to get back to Cersei.
Right.
Long story short, as he's getting back to Cersei, he notices the smoke rubble rising from the capital city. You assume by the time he arrives in the throne room, sees his twincest lover, Cersei, on the throne getting proclaimed Queen Cersei, long may she reign. He must know what have happened to Tommen. He gives her a look that can't be good. Yet from the season 7 promos, it looks, at least visually, he's in the same room with her. He didn't storm out of King's Landing and say, F this, I've had enough. And so the show is implying, I guess the promos, you could infer that he's going to try to stay by Cersei's side.
Well, you know, funnily, I think that he learned a lesson about trusting family in a way that is a little bit, would be surprising to people who, for some reason, are fans of Tyrion, who, as we all know, just doesn't measure up. Because the last time Jaime sacrificed for family,
he sacrificed a different family member,
sacrificed
his dad.
A different family member, right? So he'd learned the lesson that although Tyrion's never done from what Cersei's done, cross fingers, knock on wood, I hope, he's had some sort of awakening in his time with Brienne.
That's true. When Jaime last referred to Tyrion, he was talking with Bronn in season 5, and he said, if I ever see him again, the person who killed our father, I'm going to kill him. So it'll be interesting if Tyrion and Jaime run into each other, if Jaime will still have those thoughts. But here's where we get into the tricky part about what we call book bitching. In that Jaime storyline where we left him in the books is so far away from where he was in the show that it makes you wonder if the show is completely inventing things, if the storyline he's involved in the books will quickly wrap up and there will be nothing to it. So real quickly, let me go ahead this up for everybody.
Paint me a picture.
Just as he did on the shows, in the books, Jaime heads to River Run to take over the castle and give it to their partners in the Red Wedding, the Lannister partner in the Red Wedding, the Freys. He arrives, just as he did on the show. He threatens Lord Edmure's, in this case, unborn child in the book, as opposed to born child on the show. He says, look, do it. Long story short, the Freys do get River Run. There are hints that there are what you would call Stark sympathizers, what you would call Tully sympathizers, who are going to undermine this quote-unquote peaceful takeover of River Run. But that has happened. But there is a whole other side of the story, a Brienne side of the story, which the show has seemingly tossed aside. And this is where we get to everybody's favorite double L.
Double L?
Light Lord. The Lord of Light, R'hllor, as it's called in the books. They have been granting people the ability to bring people back from the dead.
Got it.
Back in Season 5, we met the Brotherhood Without Banners, and there we saw disgraced Red Priest Thoros of Myr suddenly finding a supernatural power and bringing back Lord Beric Dondarrion back from the dead. It happened on the show in Season 3, Episode 5 of Season 3. We saw this guy get brought back from the dead. That sets up, at the beginning of Season 6, where Melisandre uses, quote-unquote, the Lord of Light's powers to bring back Jon Snow from the dead. But as you constantly talk about Catfish, there was another character in the books brought back from the dead. And if we haven't done it already, let's give a spoiler warning. If you don't want to know about
this is a big one.
If you don't want to know about what happens in the books, you got to jump out now.
Although I used to be concerned, as far as the spoiler alerts, that this character might actually come back in the show.
This character,
that is not happening now. But at some point, we thought it could be possible. It could be possible. We didn't want to ruin it,
right.
But it's not happening now.
But it has happened in the books, so if you haven't read the books and don't want to be spoiled about the books, jump out now, because 3, 2, 1. In the books, Lord Beric Dondarrion,
LBD,
and Thoros of Myr,
T-O-M,
Tom, they have found a dead body alongside a river. And pretty much Beric Dondarrion gives up his life so that Thoros of Myr can bring back from the dead Catelyn Stark.
Whoa. Catelyn Stark. I thought she died in the Red Wedding, Bubba.
She did die in the Red Wedding. But in the books, they brought her back from the dead. And her being alive turns out to be a cliffhanger / epilogue to the third book, A Storm of Swords.
Now, quick question, Bubba.
Yeah.
We all know that when Jon Snow came back, he was just as mopey as he was before. His character seemed relatively unchanged, despite the fact that he was now living, whereas before he was dead. So I assume that Catelyn Stark is exactly the same way when she comes back from the dead.
Not at all. Because
uh-oh,
her throat was slit in the Red Wedding,
mm-hmm,
she can't really speak now that she's been brought back from the dead. She literally has to stick a couple of her fingers into her throat to help her make any sounds, and there are barely any sounds.
Too much smoking. Okay.
Plus, she was in the water so long that she kind of has what I like to call a fish look.
A fish look.
Kind of.
Okay.
Kind of sloppy.
So basically, her name would have been, if not for it's already in use. If her name hadn't already been in use, you would be calling her Gilly.
Right, exactly right. Because she was brought back from the dead and remembers the Red Wedding, she is P.O. Not that Catelyn Stark wasn't occasionally mad or angry or wanted revenge, but the character she's reborn as, referred to instead of as Catelyn Stark, called Lady Stoneheart.
Okay, but I just want to make this...
She is ready for revenge to kill everybody and kill anybody who has done her wrong.
So, but quick question. So your sense of it is that she's essentially the same person. None of the nature of her character has changed. It's just that she's the same personality, just dead set on revenge.
Well, I would go a bit further than that and say that the books and even the show hinted this about Beric Dondarrion, is that when you come back from the dead, you lose a bit of yourself. Yes, it's you, but it's like you without certain memories, without certain thoughts, without certain emotions or feelings.
Right. So it's like Pet Sematary, but for humans.
Exactly right.
But that's not what happened to Jon Snow.
On the show. We haven't seen what happens to him in the books.
Right.
You're right. On the show, he came back as a mopey moperson. But here, come on. This is about Jaime. We've really left Jaime behind.
Oh, well, I'm just so excited because I've wanted to talk about Lady Stoneheart for years. But okay, let's do it. It's about Jaime.
So, Jaime has relieved the siege of River Run. He runs into Brienne of Tarth. Now, let's do a little side tangent about Brienne. Who was looking for Sansa, who was looking for Arya, even though everybody thinks Arya's dead in the books, she's really just looking for Sansa. Brienne never finds any Stark children like she did on the show.
Loser.
Instead, Brienne gets captured by the Brotherhood and Lady Stoneheart.
Double loser.
Brienne had sworn a vow to Catelyn Stark that she would give the Kingslayer back to King's Landing and she'd get the Stark girls and bring them to safety. Obviously, she didn't do that because she didn't know where the Stark girls are. And so Lady Stoneheart is about to kill her when suddenly Lady Stoneheart gives her an ultimatum. You know, I won't kill you. I'll kill Podrick Payne. I'll kill this other guy you're traveling with. I'll kill you all unless you do this solid and bring me the Kingslayer. I was trading him for my daughters. I didn't get my daughters. I want him back. Brienne kind of spares her own life and says, okay, I'll do it. So in the books where we left Jaime, Jaime was at this camp at Pennytree. Brienne shows up. Brienne lies to Jaime, tells Jaime she's found Sansa, who's a day's ride away. She claims, however, that to get Sansa, Jaime must go with her alone. So just her and Jaime have to go, or else the Hound will kill the girl. Of course, the Hound, everybody thinks is dead, so this is a straight-up lie that Brienne is telling to get Jaime to this ambush by Lady Stoneheart.
Well, let's remember Brienne has already failed at two jobs.
Two jobs?
Well, yeah, she only had two jobs. One was she vowed to protect with her life.
Yep.
Sir Sexy Pants until he got killed by the smoke monster.
Yeah, Renly. That was terrible. Brienne.
Right. And then she was supposed to bring back the children. Also failed at that. Third is her third shot and final shot.
Well, it does look like she has got Jaime. So once again, Jaime's book bitching in the show. This has not happened at all. Jaime isn't in any danger, while in the books, Brienne is bringing him to an ambush by the Brotherhood Without Banners and Lady Stoneheart. So, one thing I've said before on our good friends at Podcast Winterfell show is that this makes me believe somehow that Jaime is not going to be killed by Lady Stoneheart and the Brotherhood Without Banners. Why? Because Jaime can't be killed by them in the show. Now, I could be completely wrong. The show could have said, well, we didn't bring back Catelyn Stark, so we'll have to find a new way for Jaime to
die.
Right,
right.
But to me, it just doesn't seem like it's possible. So it feels like the show has spoiled the books and that whatever happens with Lady Stoneheart and with Jaime and Brienne, they are going to this ambush, that somehow Jaime Lannister will escape it. You would also think if Jaime is the Valonqar, and we talked about this prophecy in our Queen Cersei book bitching, if he's the one who will choke the life out of Cersei, he couldn't die from Lady Stoneheart in that scenario either. So it makes me feel like, well, if Jaime doesn't die from Lady Stoneheart and he somehow escapes that situation he's being brought into, maybe Lady Stoneheart actually doesn't have much to do with the books. And so I consider that an even bigger book spoiler that the show has given us.
Now, as far as where the book starts, especially where Jaime and Cersei start at the beginning of the books,
mm-hmm.
and where they start at the beginning of the show,
yep.
I think as far as the show has come, it would be more satisfying for the viewers of the show for Jaime to become the Queenslayer if Cersei is indeed on the throne, because they've seen the growth that he's had. Do you feel the same way about the books, that it would be satisfying if he were the one to finally realize Cersei has gone as crazy as the Mad King, and once again, it is my job to restore a little sanity to this world?
The show, I believe, relatively closely mirrors the book as far as Jaime's kind of awakening from being a total bastard, not an actual bastard, but someone with a bastard
adjacent
attitude, and seeing how he has really awakened and become a better person, like you said, primarily from his time with Brienne, a true knight, and that is inspiring him to try to be a true knight. Would a true knight be a kinslayer, kill his sibling? I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. The Valonqar prophecy does tie up the tidiest if it's Jaime. Maybe it's too predictable, but it's kind of a tidy tie-up if it's like, okay, this is the person who kills Cersei. You would also think that one thing that the book series and the TV show keeps doing is that you get killed by, quote-unquote, your allies. Think about this. You can go back to, what would be a good one? Viserys, the very first season. Viserys makes this deal with his Dothraki. I'll give you my sister, you give me an army, everything's great. What ends up happening? The Dothraki he made the deal with and his sister end up killing him.
But they did get him what he wanted. The
golden,
crown of gold.
Golden crown, sure. Robb Stark, Catelyn Stark, they have their bannermen march with them to war. Sure enough, one of their bannermen end up killing them. It's not the quote-unquote enemy, it's the bannermen who kill them. The people who they've made deals with, the Freys.
Right, and this would be the unkindest cut, so to speak, because, as we know, they're not just brother and sister, but they're lovers. But also that you can imagine that even though if Jaime did it and realized the validity of it and how necessary it was, that would still be a crushing blow to him as well.
Oh, for sure. That would definitely be.
King and Kinslayer, it's tough.
Right. But I just want to go further into this. It's your allies who kill you, not
right.
Your buddies. Jon Snow. Who stabbed Jon Snow? Other Night's Watch members. Who is it presented killed King Joffrey? Now, King Joffrey faked his death, but who do they want you to think killed him? His allies, the Tyrells.
Right.
On the show, the Tyrells married the Lannisters, who ends up killing almost everybody in House Tyrell, the Lannisters. So, once again, it's this scenario that George was so smart to do, to always set up somebody, okay, this is somebody you're cool with, now you'll be the one to kill him.
And don't forget the irony of a guy named Hodor dying while holding a door. It would seem to me that his ally was the door.
You would think so. So let's go one step further. If Jaime is the one to kill Cersei, who could kill Jaime? Who is his ally? Who would kill him? Tyrion? Brienne?
Well, at that point, it could be Brienne. I almost feel like at that point, though, kind of where I was leading to was he realizes I have to do this. But then that's it for him. He's got no more allies. He's killed his lover. It's just that he basically just takes himself out of the equation. Maybe he becomes a priest, starts putting up chapels in the middle of nowhere, hangs out with the Hound.
That's
him
true.
And the Hound. Jaime and the Hound.
He's gone a physical transformation in the books as well, not just losing his sword-fighting hand. But in the books, he's grown a beard and shaved his head and looks more like, from what we know, a character known in history as Duncan the Tall, who's a very popular character in George R.R. Martin's novellas about Duncan Egg, they call it. And so Dunk in the Duncan Egg series theoretically died at the tragedy of Summerhall, which feels like an explosion of wildfire, which was Aegon Targaryen's attempt to rehatch dragons with wildfire that ended up just killing a bunch of people. So could Jaime die in a wildfire explosion? Boy, that is too deep in the woods. But now let's get to something, Catfish, that we've been talking about a bit and we're going to keep doing in these run-ups to Season 7. Is Jaime Lannister a Triple S?
A Triple S?
A Season 7 survivor. And because we've talked about so many characters tied to Jaime in the books, let's go down the list, and we'll hold off on Jaime for a second. So we mentioned Beric Dondarrion. He's lived his last life in the books. He gives himself up so Catelyn Stark can continue living. He's alive on the show. Last we saw him, he, Thoros, and our resurrected the Hound are headed, quote-unquote, north. Is Beric Dondarrion going to be a Triple S Season 7 survivor?
I say no.
I agree. There's no way Lord Beric, who really hasn't been in the show much.
Well, that's my other question. Is he an SSP?
SSP?
Yeah, Season 7 participant.
Well, they have released photos of him from the set. Official, promotional photos.
And
so
I say that his swan song. he's got the quadruple S.
Quadruple
yes,
S?
Yes, Season 7 swan song.
Oh, man, that is tough. So, Beric Dondarrion, no. We do not believe that Lady Stoneheart resurrected Catelyn Stark will be involved at all. So we'll push her to the side. But Lady
do that at your own peril, because she is still pissed.
Lady Brienne of Tarth. In the books, we see her leading Jaime Lannister to this ambush. Theoretically, is she going to die in the books in this Lady Stoneheart ambush? Or is she going to survive as well, somehow end up in the north as she does on the show? Is Brienne of Tarth a triple S, or is she a quadruple S?
I say she's a triple S. She survives the season.
Ooh, she survives the season so she can go work on Star Wars some more.
Yeah, and also so she can hook back up with Jaime.
All right, let's keep going down the list. We also talked about, that leads us to the biggest character of all in this book, bitching, triple S or quadruple S question, Sir Jaime Lannister. Is Jaime Lannister a triple S, a season 7 survivor, or is he a quadruple S, a
season 7 swan song? He gets a season 7 swan song. Okay, I say,
yeah.
And I know this is, I'm not trying to cover both of my bases. I actually believe this to be true, even though no one agrees with me. I said that I thought Cersei would get a season 7 swan song, but I think that Jaime is a season 7 survivor.
Whoa. So he will make it to the season 8, theoretically the final battle against the White Walkers and their army of the undead.
Right. Let's see them try to bite on the gold hand. Doesn't do anything.
Oh, if only he had a Valyrian steel hand so he could just, you know, just literally karate chop the White Walkers to death.
I replaced my gold hand with dragon glass hand. It's hard to pick things up. Now, what about you? What do you think about Jaime? You have gone on record. You say that Cersei is a triple S season 7 survivor.
And if Cersei survives season 7, according to me, then Jaime Lannister also has to be a season 7 survivor. I'm going on record that both of the twins make it to season 8.
All right. I say Cersei gets taken out by Jaime, and then he roams the land like a modern-day David Carradine. Kung Fu.
Double L's.
Double L's.
Loyal listeners, we want you to tell us what you think. Is Jaime Lannister the Kingslayer? Is he going to survive season 7? Write to us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doublepodcast. That's the word double, the single letter P, the word podcast, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. Or hit us up on Twitter. You can reach me, Bubba, at Fit and Trim. That's FitenTrim, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
Catfish, as always, is at CJGman67. Oh, Bubba, we have reached the hump/Roz podcast of our pre-gaming for Game of Thrones. But as always,
yeah,
there's always one last bit to do on the Joffrey podcast.
Beg for more iTunes reviews?
No, we stopped doing that.
Oh, okay.
That got its season 7 swan song. We have to do every week. We select what we call the Joffrey of the week. That is the person or persons, real or fictional, who represent the spirit of Joffrey, our great king and leader, the greatest real or fictional character in the history of the human race.
I don't know how we do it, but every podcast we pick our Joffrey of the Week. Well, and listeners, you can nominate your own. We want to hear from you.
Oh, yeah. Please nominate your own. Again, don't be intimidated by saying to yourself, I can't think of anyone who is exactly like Joffrey. Of course you can't. All you can do is find someone who this week reminded you of either the virtues of Joffrey, just one facet of the majesty that is King Joffrey Baratheon. And Bubba, this week,
yeah,
I went a little bit different with my Joffrey of the Week.
Oh, no.
Usually what I like to do is, as we said, pick someone who reminds me of one special aspect of Joffrey. But this week for my Joffrey of the Week,
yeah,
I picked someone who made me feel the way I feel about Joffrey.
No, that can't be.
It can
be. Are you sure?
It can be, and it's someone I like to refer to as WW.
Double W?
Yeah. It's someone I like to refer to as Double W.
Double W?
Yes. Wonder Woman.
Oh.
Gal Gadot.
You mean Double G?
Double G.
Gal Gadot?
Yeah, Gal Gadot. As I watched Wonder Woman,
yeah,
I begin to have the same kind of feelings, rumblings, stirrings in my psyche and also my physical plane that I feel whenever I think of or watch Joffrey.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
I had almost a double T feeling.
Double T?
Yeah. Tumescent Tommen.
Oh, no.
So because...
Because?
She stirred feelings in me that I haven't felt since the last time I saw Joffrey.
Yeah.
I'm giving double G.
Double G.
Gal Gadot, who plays double W.
Double W.
Wonder Woman. My Joffrey of the week.
Holy smokes. That is incredible, Catfish.
I didn't. The reason why I gave it to her because of the way she made me feel is because, honestly, I never thought I'd feel that way again. For the entirety of my life, Bubba, I just want to thank her for reminding me of what it feels like in my body to be reminded of Joffrey.
Wow. Well, that's been this week's episode.
Wait, hold on a second.
Yes.
I know it can't be better than mine.
Never.
But did you have a Joffrey of the week, Bubba?
Well, Catfish, when you think about a Joffrey of the week.
Okay.
You have to think about somebody who is a world leader.
Well, you don't have to, but okay, fine. I'll go along with you.
Joffrey led the world, was a world leader, is a world leader. So I think of other world leaders a lot of times. And so recently, there's been somebody who did something that I would say was the most Joffrey thing of all.
Wow. There's so many things that are only Joffrey. What, Bubba, pray tell, is the most Joffrey thing of all?
Well, Catfish, you know I like to play games. So I'll give you some clues and let's see if you can figure it out.
Okay.
Now, this person,
uh-huh,
they really thought they were a great leader like Joffrey. Then they decided that they wanted kind of more power to make things straight.
Got it. Uh-huh.
And so they decided to hold a special election.
Got it. Uh-huh.
To kind of help give them power. And they decided to do it because when they looked at the polls, they had a 22-point lead.
Wow, that's a big lead.
Right. And so they ended up falling apart and losing enough seats to where they almost couldn't have a government.
Wow, this is really not reminding me of Joffrey.
It is reminding me of you of Joffrey when I put it like this. My Joffrey of the week, Theresa May. Because when she blew that 22-point lead in the election that she called for, she choked. Just like Joffrey choked at his wedding. Now, Joffrey survived it just like Theresa May did. Because Theresa May, in that election, she could have been knocked out of office. But just like Joffrey, she was down. But just like Joffrey, she's not out. She's combining with some people from Northern Ireland, where they filmed Game of Thrones, to some real winners from Northern Ireland to make a government. So Theresa May, for being like Joffrey, having Joffrey's haircut, and being as pleasant as Joffrey, Theresa May, British
PM.
Prime Minister? Theresa May, my Joffrey of the week. And that's for all our wonderful listeners in the UK. I love
over
them.
Over the pond.
Yeah, I want them to always have a Joffrey in their life, and they feel like they've got one.
Wow.
And we've got one, too. Everybody, you know, we need to get one to Canada. Because Trudeau really feels, how do I say this?
Dreamy?
A little, he's a little Robb Starkish, and we know what happened to him. So, Theresa May, my Joffrey of the week.
Wow, when you said worldwide leader, I thought for sure you were going to pick ESPN as your Joffrey of the week. You know what?
You
really pulled a switcheroo on me there, Bubba.
Listeners, once again, we want to know who your Joffrey of the week is. We are 4 weeks away from new Game of Thrones. This is so exciting.
Woo-hoo.
If you have a character you want us to do a double B section on, write to us. Let us know. We are excited. We can't wait. We're so honored that you're joining us on this countdown to season 7.
Oh, yeah. And we cannot wait to talk to you next week on
the Joffrey of Podcasts. AF.